Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Very special episode today. Our guest is one of our, I guess you could say comedy mentors. I don't know. We looked up to this guy a lot growing up. Obviously, he was crushing it in the 90s in the movie world, was all over MTV, introduced us to the world of spring break boobies. I'm talking about Pauly Shore, the Biodome in the Army now, Jury Duty, Encino Man. Pauly Shore was a staple in the movie business during the height of the 90s, and everybody knows him. He's just kind of like became a pop culture phenomenon through coming up through the Comedy Store and being around all these legendary comedians. Of course, the Comedy Store is an iconic comedy club in Los Angeles that I'm lucky enough to be a paid regular at and get to go up at a couple times a week. Mitzi Shore, Pauly's mom, started the Comedy Store and is responsible for developing the careers of Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, David Letterman, Jim Carrey, Roseanne Barr, Jay Leno. The list goes on and on. Sam Kinison. All these guys came up through the Comedy Store and were kind of under Mitzi's wings as far as getting stage time and developing their act. And Pauly, of course, was a young, impressionable kid who came up in all that. And he's got these amazing stories that he shares with us today, as well as his MTV days, the movie biz, life on the road, and then being Pauly Shore in 2014. And his new Showtime documentary called Pauly Shore Stands Alone, which comes out December 4th on Showtime, is an interesting look at Pauly Shore, a vulnerable side that you just don't get to see on TV or when you're around him at the comedy clubs. The whole documentary is captured on a handheld video camera on and off stage, and it's really inspiring and heartwarming and sad, and it really gives you a nice look into the world of a stand-up comedian, and especially one who's had so much success and is at a point in his life where he's trying to keep that going and still be relevant, and he is. And it reminds you, too, how fucking funny Pauly Shore is. Follow Pauly on Twitter, at Pauly Shore. His podcast, Pauly Shore's Interested, is on iTunes. It's an incredible, very original podcast. There's so many podcasts out there. And what he does is he interviews a big-name comic, and then he has another big-name comic comment on that episode, new commentary on it. It's pretty incredible. So check that out. Pauly Shore is Interested, his podcast. And, of course, Pauly Shore Stands Alone, the documentary, December 4th on Showtime. Follow me on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter, at Funny Brad. Of course, get all our tour dates and information about upcoming shows at AdamRayTV.com and BradWilliamsComedy.com. I will be at the Sacramento Punchline next Thursday through Sunday. I'm sorry, next Friday through Sunday, November 28th, 29th, and 30th. Opening for Brad at the Sacramento Punchline. Get tickets at SacramentoPunchline.com or BradWilliamsComedy.com. And come out and enjoy the fun. Also, I'll be at Joker's Comedy Club December 4th through the 6th in Richland, Washington, and the Parlor Live, my home club in Seattle, actually in Bellevue, Washington this time, December 26th and 27th. Get your tickets at ParlorLive.com. And, of course, head over to EstoyMerchandise.com. Can't say it enough, E-S-T-O-Y, Merchandise.com. Pick up your ABLN T-shirts and tank tops. Come on, get them. The holidays are coming up. Give them to somebody that you love, somebody that you care about, somebody that doesn't know about the fucking podcast. They're cool-ass shirts, man. Rock them around town. They're comfy. You know, they make great stocking stuffers. Get your shirts, Estoy, E-S-T-O-Y, merchandise.com. Click on About Last Night podcast and order your shirts. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Comment on the iTunes page. That helps us climb the charts. Give it a 5-star rating and help us continue to do what we do, because we got so many cool fucking guests coming up. The Melissa McCarthy, Ben Falcone episode is coming out in a few weeks. Rob Schneider, Jeff Garlin, working on John Krasinski from The Office, some other big-ass fucking names. A lot of great comic buddies. We've got episodes in the can getting ready to come out. Joe Coy, my friend Charity Thielen from the band The Head and the Heart. Really some awesome guests and episodes coming up. So subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family. Those are the tour dates. Those are the Twitter handles. That's all the merchandise info. But now sit back and enjoy a very special episode of the About Last Night podcast with the Pauly Shore.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Do you still smoke a little pot every now and then?
Are we recording?
Yeah. we can edit it.
I do it, you know, when I feel like I want to do it. I don't do it like just to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
I'm just high normally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do people assume that just from the way you speak?
Yeah. Yeah, always.
I remember I ran into you one time at LAX at like 6:30 in the morning, and you gave me such an enthusiastic hug that I thought, oh yeah, Paulie's definitely on something. Because it's like 6:30 in the morning, and he's squeezing.
Didn't get any sleep.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're just wired.
Probably like, yeah, it was just
the road does that to you, right?
LAX.
Yeah,
LAX. Do you travel? Do you tour
all the time?
A lot?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, and it's you get into a rhythm of like, I think the travel of like how much to pack and like when to wake up. But sometimes when it's like a 6 a.m. flight and you in shows are done at 1 and you're like, do I go to bed for 2 hours or do I stay up? And then all of a sudden you do that 2-3 weekends in a row, and it's like you show up to LAX at 10 and you're like, you see anybody.
And how good is sushi when you get back to LA?
It's the best.
After the road.
What do you do when you come back?
Sandy, I go to the spa.
Yeah, that's what he's telling me.
I go to the spa all the time, the bathhouse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or there's two spas.
They have sushi at the bathhouse or are they separate?
No. All right. No, I go to two different spas. I go to the Russian Turkish bathhouse. They call it the Schwitz, and then or I go to the Korean one, which is like where Bobby Lee goes.
I went to that with him once. That was incredible.
Amazing.
I've been wanting to go to it since. It was like Bobby, he was coming back from Arizona, and he was driving, and he was like, meet me at the spa, and it was like 3 a.m., and they're open, and he walks in, and Bobby's like,
they're open at 3 a.m.? I've never been to this place.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Cool.
We first of all, and it was hilarious because Bobby made a big deal about how
they have pictures on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't know who he is. He always comes in. He goes, hey. And he points to the picture and they're like, huh? And he's like, my picture's been on the wall for like 10 years and they never look at me and they never recognize him. But we sat in like a freezing cold bath.
Yeah.
And then like...
I always go in there. The thing is what's like me, like I go in those places, it's like... They're all Koreans. Barely anyone speaks English, and they're watching like Asian TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
which is what
in,
usually.
And I walk in, I go, hey, and they're looking at me. I'm like, what, bro? That's what we do here. Hey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I do. You know,
that's how you order the Schwitz, right? You go,
yeah,
hey,
go to the. No, that's the Korean one.
Oh, okay.
The Korean one. The Russian one, they don't do that.
It's so weird, the tiny things that you lose when you go on the road. Even I didn't know that Subway sandwich shops all around the country don't use like slices of avocado. They put like some guacamole thing.
And oh, so, probably.
Yeah, so whenever I get home, it's like, oh, finally.
A real avocado, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly the spa. It's a little less like, oh, I have my preferences of fast food, but yeah, we're trying.
Yeah, well, you know how it is.
How did you how long were you on the road before you were doing this special, this documentary?
Oh, the documentary?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I shot that in, I think it was like about 9 days.
No shit.
Probably 7 or 8, 9 days.
Yeah.
Did you guys see it? Or
I saw the trailer you sent me.
The trailer. Yeah. The trailer.
Looks incredible.
Yeah, it's fun. So
So that was over 9 days, over how many cities?
I think about 9 days. I think like 7 cities in a row.
And then what made you want to shoot this thing?
I just, you know, I've played these like, you know, these really obscure towns like for many years. Mm-hmm. And I always thought visually like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Like, these are towns, like, most of them that have never done stand-up. And I always thought visually, like, they were just so, like, untouched.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, kinda you mentioned like, one place, like, Eau Claire. Was that a...
Yeah, like, Eau Claire and Antigo, Wisconsin. And,
Jesus.
And just, like, these places that have never done stand-up. So, visually, I thought it was, like, a really cool thing. And then I was going through a lot of stuff with my mom and my family at the time. Like, you know, like I was there sad and just kind of like, you know, living in my mom's house with her dying of Parkinson's downstairs and me living in the house and just kind of being tired. And I just thought like that would be a really kind of cool time to film, like, emotionally, like just to like
where you were,
be by myself, mm-hmm. be on camera by myself at this time where I'm like very vulnerable and kind of like, you know,
yeah, well,
it, sad it, and not sad. I don't know.
It's yeah. certainly a side of Pauly yeah. Shore that the vast majority of the public are not familiar yeah. with.
Like, yeah, it's like the Robin Williams thing, you know, like all us comedians, like they put on this kind of front, you know what I mean? But
sure.
there's like a sadness or depression that we all kind of, you know, have, because that's part of the reason why we do stand up, so mm-hmm. we can get that acceptance from those people. Like, it was funny, like we all circle the OR room downstairs, yeah. like, you know, like everyone's like femuring just to like get on that stage, like everyone's like a junkie, and we do it because like we want that acceptance.
And there is a therapy level, like you mentioned in the 100%. Documentary too. How much of comedy is therapy for you?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
Like, but it wasn't when you got into it.
No. No, because like for me it's like you know, just no family, you know. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have a family, I don't have kids, I don't have a wife, I don't have that thing.
The community of stand up is kind of like,
well, a lot of comics do, though. I mean, Greg Fitzsimmons, doesn't he have, like, kids and a wife and shit?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he's got, like, a normal life. What the hell, right?
But you know what I'm saying?
An outsider.
Like, so, you know, you kind of use the audience and you use the road, for me, like, emotionally, like, for that. You know, I like to, you know, kind of go out. And plus, like, for me, it's like I can think funnier when I'm out of L.A. for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, less clutter.
Well, there's so many distractions of the business first and foremost, and just like
You saw me, like, you guys just came up to my office and I'm like fucking dicking around with emails and like I fucking hate it.
Yeah
it's the worst. I hate social media. I hate all that
shit.
Do
you really?
It's what's the fucking worst? It's like something you have to do, and it's not like,
because you, I mean, when you came up, none of this shit existed.
No, it wasn't. It was so much easier and better.
Was it?
It was simpler. All you had to do was like go on audition, send your headshot, you know, your agent mm-hmm. would send, you know, your audition tape. You know what I mean?
And now it's like this other muscle, because you have to be funny on stage, and you also have to be funny, for instance, in
on
a
Twitter.
Podcast, and then you also have to be funny on Twitter. And to be funny on Twitter is way different than being funny on stage.
And they don't
stage.
Think about that. They just go, well, if you're funny on stage, you should be able to be funny in 90 characters. And you're like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just exhausting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, like, we have to, you know, I think I did like Nick Youssef and Kevin's, Christie's podcast last week, and they and we were talking about like Vine, and Nick's like, yeah, it's just another thing we have to do.
You know what I mean? Exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
What the fuck? Are you guys do Vine?
I mean, kind of now and then, but like not proactively. Like I always.
Dalia's got a lot of time on his hand, doesn't he? Like, is he? He's like a chick, but a dude. Like, he's always like, right? Is he always Vining?
He's on the precipice of, I think, when new shit comes out, he's not Vining as much anymore. But I think, yeah, a lot of it has to do with having time. And I think he also, I think, by nature, is in his phone a lot, you know. And I think mm-hmm. if you're down there a lot, and but I think it was a dicking around for a lot of these people who blew up on it. They were just fucking around with this new app, and then I don't. Nobody really anticipated how it was going to blow up, but
I don't know.
But I
get, you know what I mean. Like it, I get it's something that, you know, you have to do and you have to get on. But you know, it's like, I don't know. I have other things to do.
Yeah,
you know?
Like when you start. By the way, we should say we're in the comedy store right now, which. We're in the upstairs green room of the belly room. There are three mm-hmm. rooms here. If you're not familiar, the main room and the OR. This has got to be almost like, I mean, how much time? You probably spent more time here than at your actual house.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, could,
how many years?
You were literally raised
since
here.
Since I was four.
Right.
That was the first time you were in here.
Yeah.
Who was the first
you
comic you saw it for?
Seen anything.
I was just going to say, man.
Yeah.
We come around these parts, like, and still, you can still get the vibe, you know, but like I just have such a thirsty desire to, like, and that's why I'm so thankful that we're here with you right now to like really hear, like, when I've had, you know, small conversations with people who really came up and like,
well, get some of the older comics, you know, that, you know, that like that, that don't get stage time here anymore. Like, get those guys on your podcast and they'll tell you the real stories.
Well, during that Robin tribute, it was so beautiful, Robin, that you put together, by the way, and the way you hosted that, and it was just so well done, and you got the perfect people to come speak about it. And but like a lot of those guys, right? Like, they, I was looking at these guys being like, holy shit, man, there's stuff that's just not even stories and things that are addressed that like are these guys were sharing.
Like the main room stage, you know, my mom didn't own, you know, it was like, that was like Ciro's, and then she was in a dispute with this guy Art LeBeau, who owned the property of it, and then they broke down the wall and they bought the main room and stuff. And that room was like, there used to be the Comedy Store Players,
right?
There was an improv group, and it was a big improv group, and there were some like really good comedians, and Monday nights were like the night here at the Comedy Store. Like, a line used to pack out, like hundreds of people would pack out always, you know, it was free to get in. It was Monday night, so it was like the rock and roll night. And they used to open with, I would go on first with my band. I had a band
called,
and we were called We Don't Know Yet, because we never knew the name.
We never knew. Yeah, well, what's the name of your band?
We don't know yet.
Perfect.
And then I used to play drums, and then Smokey Robinson's kid, Barry Robinson, he used to play bass, and I had this kid, Dean Zuckerman, who was the guitar player, who had like zits on his back and like a 9-inch cock. It was so weird.
Please tell me that's what you were looking for when you were looking for a bassist.
I swear to God, this guy was like, he like could kill
the Beatles. Huge cock, zitty back.
Dude, he could kill the Beatles. Like, just fucking, yeah, just so good. And we're talking like fifth, sixth grade. Like, amazing. Like, amazing. And I used to swear to God, I used to charge kids to see his dick. Like, for sure. But
like, why not the zitty back?
Yeah.
No, that's way, that's not as interesting as a 9-inch cock.
Now, how much would you charge?
That's like a dollar, you know what I mean? To glance at it.
Typical,
like,
typical mini Kit Kats.
Like, he was in fifth grade, and he had like pubes and the whole thing.
Jesus.
Like, for real, yeah.
So you were like P.T. Barnum of cocks.
Pretty much. In fifth grade, I was making money. I was wheeling, dealing. You know what I mean? A lot of like guys were like throwing dice and, you know.
Yeah, some kids had a paper route.
Yeah, I'm like, who wants to see Dean's dick? All right, gather. People be like, holy shit, it's huge.
Oh, man.
You know?
You weren't kidding.
So we used to go up. My band, we used to go up, and then after would be the Comedy Store Players, and that's with Robin Williams and Jim Stahl and all these, just kind of like, you know, all those pictures you see on the wall, like in the main room. And then after that, the comedy began, and that was like, you know, full on, like straight up, like all star comics.
So then people since stand up started to become more prevalent around the store after the Players.
No, they started the stand-up portion of the show.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and that's when the stand-up portion would start, and that's when, like, just like, you know, Robin would go up, and then Kennison and Dice and Eddie Murphy, and it was like, Eddie Murphy was like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
I was just going to ask, what was that like?
So
seeing him when
funny,
he was...
dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a superstar. He was like, you know, he was like a movie star, a superstar, Saturday Night Live. You know, and he just had that funny laugh. And
they talk about the it factor. I mean, he just walked down stage with the confidence of just like, you wanted to listen to everything he said.
100%.
And how often do you feel like you've seen that since?
Oh, since I've seen that since?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That
I mean,
early
not
on.
That much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Do you think that you can recognize guys and girls when they come in that go, okay, that person's got that factor? I mean, you've been literally around comedy your entire life.
I don't know. I mean, I think like I have a sense of who's funny. I mean, Gerard came in years ago or a couple of years ago, whenever it was.
Gerard Carmichael, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that he had something. And I told Tommy, you know, at the time, I'm like, make this guy a paid regular. Like, I think he's got something. You know, he was just kind of very likable, and he was smart, and he was young, and so I thought he was...
Well, you were right about that.
Yeah, he was special. Yeah.
When you were four, do you remember your first, like, seeing? Did you like?
Yeah,
you have any,
for sure. Yeah. Of course.
What's your first memory of comedy?
My first memory on comedy was going on tour with my dad.
Sammy Shore.
Yeah, my dad used to work cruise ships, and he used to take me and my brother Peter, and my sister Scott. My sister Sandy and Scott, my other brother, and we used to go to, like, you know, my dad would open for guys like Engelbert Humperdinck or Sinatra or Sammy Davis Jr. or, you know, Elvis Presley. He opened for Elvis Presley, and I remember meeting Elvis as a kid.
Jeez.
You know, when I was a kid, yeah.
What do you say to you?
I saw that.
A big fan of your band. We don't know yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hoping you get a name soon.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, I know. Everyone tells me to write the book. Everyone tells me to do the one man show. Everyone tells me to, like, talk about the stories, you know?
I mean, so. And that being your earliest memory of comedy, what, do you remember seeing your dad and thinking at all that I wanted to do that?
I always kind of knew subliminally, you know, and you kind of see this in the documentary, like I talk about it, like I always knew kind of subliminally I was going to do this just because when I was younger, I used to like, you know, be funny without knowing I was funny. Like yeah. My mom would laugh at me, but I would be serious. You know what I mean? Because I was really like, it's funny because when I was in the band in the main room here, I would play drums and I was always very serious,
right.
You know, ever since, I mean, you guys see me, I'm not always fucking around. Yeah. I'm always pretty serious. And
I see you in the corner crying, watching Lifetime movies a lot. Like in your office.
Exactly.
You give us a sweet side.
No, I was always, you know, shit. What was I? Oh yeah, I was always serious. And when I played in the band in the main room, I remember, you know, they had the videotape. We had videotape.
Yeah.
There's this guy Lou Deck, who is this oldest, crustiest fucker dude. You should interview him, dude. Oh, my God. He was the guy that filmed all the archive stuff.
No kidding.
Pretty much.
After we fund the 9-inch cock.
Yeah, or you'll fund 9-inch cock.
He's next
first.
In line.
I remember watching the videotape back, you know, of me and my band, and I just hear my mom laughing the whole time.
Oh, shit.
And I'm, like, looking at the video, and I know she's laughing because I'm being serious behind the drums.
And that's making her...
She just thought it was really funny.
So then you pick up on that. And you're like, all right, well, there's obviously something I'm doing.
Yeah, like a straight, dry sense of humor.
Because there's always got to be something, I feel like, that's when people start and they start to recognize that they've got something.
The thing,
that...
You know, the thing, like, about the store that, you know, is really great, you know, I'll tell you two things about the store that's really great and something that's really not great about it.
Perfect.
The great thing about it is my mom is kind of like... kind of put her claws into this place and kind of and created a system, you know, that's already kind of in place, and the system has already worked, and it's a system of, you know, developing and you know, and family and camaraderie and putting in the time, and you know, it's like the school of hard knocks, you know what I mean? And you know, just to try to get going, you know what I mean? But the bad part about that is there's no one here at this time that really focuses the system. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Tommy kind of did it, you know what I mean? But Tommy's not here anymore. So now you have Adam and Eric and, you know, me, I run around and different people, and it's just, there's no focus, you know, to me. That's kind of like, the comics are kind of running this place.
So you
back in the day, my mom ran this place. Do you understand? She would walk in and there was a focus. And everyone was kind of like in position, almost like a general.
And there is none
of that. So everyone is kind of trying to figure it out themselves. And it's kind of like everyone is like, you know, on their own here. There's no like guru person to kind of like go to and say, hey, you know what I mean?
And you think that's...
It's bad. I think it's bad.
You're saying that we need that again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, and
every business does.
For sure.
Yeah.
And the CEO, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And especially with someone like your mom, whose eye for talent was just insane.
And like, she was the owner, though. It was like, it was a combination. It was her club, and she had the direction and the eye for talent. And she would, you know, she would look at you guys, like you two guys, and you'd go on stage, and she thought if she thought you were funny, she would say something to you. And she'd give you a direction and maybe give you a wardrobe kind of suggestion.
She told me not to wear hats anymore.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Said, you're very funny, but I don't like your hat.
Yeah. Okay.
I was like,
so
cool.
So she would do that. And then she would also, like, if she didn't like you, she wouldn't say anything to you. Or she would just didn't think you were ready.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The thing she said to me was, she's like, you're very funny, but the microphone's there for a reason. You keep running away from the microphone. Stay there.
Yeah.
And is like, that what she said?
Yeah, because I would run away from the mic, and because I knew it, my voice was loud enough that I could project, and I didn't necessarily need it. But then she would tell me, like, that mic is your power. Get back there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did, and it certainly did help. Like, she would pick out the minutia of every comic, like you with the hat. Just yeah. Hey, the hat thing, me, the mic. I'm sure there's plenty of people, plenty of other comics where she just saw like one little thing and was able to twist it.
Now, was she the one that the hand, like Jim Carrey prior? I mean, were they coming here and she had to? She straight up was like, "Yeah, you now come here all the time."
Yeah, well, she would develop. You know what I mean? Like Howie Mandel and Gary Shandling and all these guys. Like she would just develop them. You know what I mean? And give them spots and put them in Westwood and put them at the store here and just kind of develop their stuff.
That's the other thing I guess you're commenting on that's missing is that development and the. I guess the commitment from somebody that's like really, and yeah, not like just the business side, but yeah.
It's almost like if you're on the set of a movie and Quentin Tarantino, it's Quentin Tarantino's movie, but he's not around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then you got to like talk to the producer, talk to the you know, the cameraman and kind of just try to figure it out.
Because there is an element of stand-up that that is, I think, beneficial that we do have to figure out on our own.
Well, look at Lorne Michaels at SNL. Like yeah. He's kind of like the director of the whole thing. And
right.
He picks the people and then he kind of probably gives them some direction, you know.
Everybody
you know,
needs some direction on something when they're getting
100%,
going. 100%. Yeah.
Especially when they're developing.
And now you coming up and doing stand-up, did you have an
mentors?
Added pressure? Because, like, that's your mom?
I still feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Even though I've been in movies and being on the stage, part of me hates being on that stage just because I feel like, you know, I've already made it and, like, I go out on the road and... And, like, this is for the younger guys, and you know what I mean? I feel like it's, like, kind of, like, I don't know, like, it's, I don't want to say my time has passed, but I feel like I've already made it, you know what I mean? Like, I can go and get stage time anywhere I want. These mm-hmm. guys are, like, scrapping for stage time, but, you know, I don't really like to go up unless I'm trying to do new material.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like to go up and do stuff that I know that works, you know, when I'm here.
Taking a spot from somebody who's...
Exactly. Or cool. Or the main room. I'll do that and do material that I know that's done, but...
But there's also, it's such a part of you that you'll never be able to stop going up, right?
Yeah, I think so.
When did you have mentors? Because I'm curious, because we were just talking about, like, having people to help guide you and stuff, and I feel like that's something that's... The store has been great about just being around. Like when I started finally doing the phones here and was around a lot more.
That was probably great for you.
It was incredible because A, it got me more, it made me feel more comfortable.
Confident
and comfortable and just being around more, which people say early on, they're like, just be around. And you never really know that as a young comic because you're like, what is being around going to do? I need to be on stage. But that would, the more Brett Ernst and Bobby and you started like see me, A, I would feel more comfortable, but B, they would, feel comfortable. You'd end up in enough conversations to where you build some rapport to where Bobby or Brett or yourself would want to say, hey, by the way, I caught a little bit of what you're doing, and here's some free advice. Because as a young comic, you can't just walk up to fucking, you know, Bill Burr and go, hey, what do you think about my closer? He's like, who the fuck? Like, this isn't how that works.
Yeah.
So being around was very beneficial. So who were your... And I'm sure that's how it was for you when you started here, right? You had people that would... Maybe mentor you a little bit or just throw some tips at you or no?
No, I just, you know, I would just do what you guys are doing, which is just be around. You know what I mean? I wouldn't like go up to people and say, hey, what do you think of da 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 da?
Yeah.
It's mostly just being around it and learning what I liked and learning what I didn't like, you know, from watching the different comedians.
You would watch a lot, yeah?
Yeah, a lot.
That's one thing I try to do, too, because it's like
lot.
You sit in that OR on...
Yeah, like, I saw Whitney last night. Like, her stuff's getting better. You know what I mean? Like, her... Because I said, what are you doing now? She says, I'm just trying to do another new hour. You know what I mean? So I was watching her. She went on before me. And she did... you know, she was connecting with the audience and... Your material is getting better.
Who are the guys that you would make a point to watch when you were starting here?
Oh, when I was starting here? Well, this room right here, when I was under 21 or whatever, I was, you know, I wasn't allowed in the club.
Yeah.
I mean, I can come here during the day, but at night when there was alcohol, like my mom didn't want me here, so I would watch the comedians from here or I'd watch them from the light booth.
Oh shit.
So I'd watch Cheech and Chong here.
Oh my god.
You know, like who was it? Lenny Schultz, you know, who was like this older guy that was really one of my favorite comedians. So I don't know.
You watch Pryor from there?
No, I'd watch him in the OR mostly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a comic, obviously, whenever someone says, hey, your comedic influence, I feel like everyone has to say Richard Pryor. Mm. They have to because he was that good.
He was so good.
You were actually a guy that got to see him walk into the Comedy Store.
Yeah. I went to his funeral, dude.
That's insane.
That was fucking fucked up, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Dude, you know what's crazy is I fucking, when I was on MTV, like I fucking filmed a whole like week of or a whole day or something of Totally Polly with him.
What?
So I have footage of me and him on MTV.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
Oh
right?
my God. Have you, did you just go back
right at the beginning, but right at the beginning of his disease.
Yeah.
So he was, in a wheelchair, but he was
but
still
still with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you do with him on that? On the Totally Polly?
I was just like, hey, bro. You know what I mean? I'd start doing the wheeze to him and shit.
How did he respond?
He giggled.
Fuck, dude.
He loved it.
He had a great laugh.
He was great, yeah.
That's, I mean, to make the king laugh, that's got that's gotta be one of the biggest
thrills. He liked comedy, and he was so, it's funny because I said to Chris, like, I talked to Dane Cook like a week or so ago, and I said to Dane, why don't you work out at the store, dude? Like, we love you. Like, you're funny. Like, develop your shit, dude. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, he goes, well, how do I do it? I go, well, just call in on Monday. You know, just put your veils like everyone else, me, Chris, Whitney, Bobby, we all just call in and we do our 10-minute spots. We'd love to have you just work out.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you have to work at the Laugh Factory?
It'd be awesome if he was here.
And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, then work out, right? So then last night I asked Chris D'Elia, I'm like, dude, well, we didn't call in his avails, bro. What's up? And he goes, oh, he's not going to call in. I'm like, why? He's like, I don't know. He's just not going to call in.
I'll talk to him.
But my point is that that Richard Pryor was so, he was egoless. You know what I mean? He didn't have an ego. Everyone was cool. Like, he would, and I've told this story before, he would pull his car in. And you know how, like, you know, we're all kind of tweaked into our own thing. And, like, especially I know I am. Like, I've come in. I don't want to speak to anyone. You know,
yeah.
I'm thinking about my shit. And it doesn't, you know, maybe people might think it comes across rude, but I'm not trying to be rude.
It's just work. Like, yeah, you get to a point to where, like, the networking part, you're not here trying to, like, make new buddies.
No,
like, you're cordial.
But,
you acknowledge.
It's also my family business. And
of
I
course.
Have to talk to people. And I have to, you know, be respectful to people that are here and stuff.
Yeah, when you're here, it's a whole nother level. You're not just thinking about your comedy. You're thinking about the business as a
whole.
Yeah,
I got to make sure that, you know, the waitresses are doing this. The food's coming out. I don't know. There's all that other shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, fucking back doormen aren't on their phones. These fucking guys, they stare at their phones.
It was never like that.
Dude, like, fucking people are walking in and out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just like, so that, you know, that plays into some of my stuff. So, you know, Richard Pryor, he would pull his car into the driveway, and it would take him almost 20 minutes just to get to the back door because he would shake everyone's hand.
Oh, my God.
And so
not everybody did that, huh?
No, that was just who Richard Pryor was.
Yeah.
Do you think he knew what that meant to other people for him to come up to a young
probably,
comic?
Probably, yeah. I mean,
shake
probably.
Their hand? Because, yeah, Richard Pryor shakes your hand. That's a comic's dream right there.
Yeah.
That's a story. What would the room be like when he would pop in? Was it just
It was
this?
Like Jesus. No, I'm serious. It was like, you know, like, I mean, there were so many times where I was in the OR where I knew he was about to go up, and the person before, you know, just be like, ladies and gentlemen, Richard Pryor. And people were like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And people would stand up. You know how, like, now, like, Chris Rock or Louis C.K. or, you know, Attell will go up and people clap, you know, and they're stoked, and it's like a big deal. They everyone would stand up.
Holy shit.
They would all stand up.
So it's like the king is here, and everyone would stand
pretty much,
and
pay
their respect to him.
Pretty much. And he would just fucking, you know, he would get on the mic and he would just fucking start just being likable.
Would he get lit, or would he kind of get the free range to do whatever he...
He was always, you know, he was always really respectful about the club and the other comics.
I'm a big fan of that.
He wasn't like, you know, Eddie Griffin, who would just go up on stage and, and, you know, go up there and start drinking champagne and just be up there for a long time. That's what I always, you know, said about the store. Like, you know, the store is the star. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not every all of us, you know, like, it's the store. You have to respect the store, respect the other comics.
Yeah,
no one drives by
and says, hey, that's the stage where so and so was. They go say that's the Comedy Store.
Yeah,
that's where everything happens.
Yeah.
Now, I first met you here, Polly, and then got to host for you at the San Jose Improv with you and Sean Halpin. Remember that weekend?
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah.
You were trying to come up, I think, for your I think Polytics, was that the special you were working on at the time?
Probably.
Yeah, and you were trying to come up with
it. Hard, dude.
Yeah.
These specials are so hard.
I can't imagine. I mean, the pace.
Everything is so hard. It's fucked.
Well, that, and especially now where I think it was before when you were developing a special, everything could stay hidden. You could just be like, all right, I'm just going to work out, and that material is going to live in that moment. But now everyone's tweeting stuff out. Everyone's posting video. And I'm sure you pop into a club, everyone's phones probably whip out, and they probably start recording your voice on stage.
I don't know. I guess. You can't really control it.
One of my best friends, Sandy Danto, good pal of yours too, I think the first time when he first told me he was going on the road with you, he showed me a clip of when you guys were at a mall in, Canada.
Yeah.
And you
made him bungee jump.
You made Sandy Danto bungee jump?
It may be one of the funniest things I've ever seen to this day because you're so – Sandy's so wide-eyed and eager and such a sweet, wanting to do good by everybody and people pleaser. And you're like, do it for the store, bro. And Sandy had never bungee jumped, right?
Yeah, who has? Things you do.
Yeah, Google Sandy Danto think the first words in your head are obviously going to be bungee jumper.
Yeah. And saying do it for the store was like the way my mom used to berate me about shaving before we go to Temple. She's like, shave. We're going to Temple. I was like, Mom, who gives a shit? It's just facial hair. She's like, if you love me, you'll shave.
Right.
So it's the same thing as do it for the store, man. All of a sudden there's this big pressure, and when he jumped and he was mic'd up and he was just screaming because apparently before you got to look up, type in Sandy Danto bungee jump Pauly Shore, before he runs off the guy goes no wait, right? Because something wasn't
holy shit.
So you hear Sandy go as he's falling to his seeming and Pauly just laughing like that, and then the rush that Sandy has afterwards, and you're trying to talk to him how was it, bro, and he's like, oh man, oh fuck, dude, it's unbelievable, because you hear Sandy screaming with fear as he's falling, and
it was great. It was like the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one more thing. One more thing that I like about you, Pauly, is that you're a guy, and I hear plenty of stories from staff. If you were just at a particular club on the road, is you like to go and have fun. You're not a guy that you just go and you stay in your hotel room all day every day and then just go to the show and go back. You like to go out and
sometimes
and you experience,
Dayton,
Ohio.
Yeah, that's the thing is I don't like to go out and drink as much as I don't go to the strip clubs. I don't do the bars. I don't do that as much. Only because the strip clubs I'll do more than the bars, just because when you go to a strip club,
they got good food.
You're left alone. No, you're left alone.
Oh, okay.
I'm left alone. You know what
really?
I mean? Because there's security there and they watch me and I could be left alone and I can order some drinks and look at some girls. But if I'm at a club,
everyone's coming.
Then it's
to
like
you.
Weasel, yo, you know what I mean? And I'm so tired and I'm 46 now, so I'm like fucking, after every one of my shows, I always do the merch. You know what I mean? Do the merch line. I always take pictures with everyone.
Right.
People don't realize that.
Yeah.
After that, they see you out. They don't think about what you just went through.
No.
And the exhaustion of, just
there's
the show.
There's four shows a night. There's four shows. I look at it at four shows. There's the first show. Then there's the merch for the first show. There's the second show. Then there's the merch for the second show.
Yeah. Merch and meet and greets. You're having more moments for all these people that came. Yeah. Now, how much of that, during the heyday of all the movies and everything, how much were people coming up to you and just, weaseling you, and where you would respond to it?
How much what?
Were people coming up to you and fucking weaseling that and quoting everything?
I can't believe it's still there.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird.
No, it's, but dude, it was fucking, your movies were iconic. Dude.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
I guess it's weird for you, because to you it's just work.
But I don't think of it as my movies. I think of it as me. I think that it's not MTV, it's not the movies, it's me, it's Pauly.
Yeah.
It's like people feel connected to me. Every race, every genre. I go walk through airports, I go to these little towns, it's always like, hi, yo, hi. It's not, you know what I mean?
That doesn't get old, right?
I don't know. It depends.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Depends on who it is.
It is you, because if they put another actor in that same movie with that same script, they wouldn't have had those moments.
Yeah, Ted Danson could not have done Biodome.
No. I hope Dumb and Dumber 2 does good, because then if it does good, then I might be able to do Biodome 2.
Fuck.
That'd be awesome. Dude.
Put the Kickstarter right now. I will donate.
That'd be fun.
It's funny you mention that, because I look at guys today like Adam Sandler, like Rob Schneider, and I see their kind of goofiness that they do in movies, and I go, that's Pauly. Mm. That's what Pauly did. Mm-hmm. Do you see guys like that and go, hey, fucker, I laid the groundwork for you.
I did it before those guys.
Yeah, you
know
did.
What I mean? I did it before Jim Carrey. I did it before, like, I think Encino Man came out in, like, 91, 92. Mm-hmm. And then after that, like, Ace Ventura. I mean, Jim Carrey took it to another level.
Sure.
Like, he, you know.
Encino Man is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Thank you. Thank you. I love
it. It's a lot of people's favorite movies.
It's a cute movie.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where it hits you at the right time in your life, and you're just
– it reminds me of E.T.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Right?
Spielberg, E.T., Pauly Shore, Encino Man. Perfect.
It's like, but no, Encino Man was such a cute film because it was like sweet. You know what I mean?
It's a fish out of water story.
Fish out of water.
And the friendship.
Like friendship. You know what I mean? All that stuff. And then
what was that like doing that movie?
Heaven, dude. It's been heaven the whole time. You know, I mean,
you enjoy the process of making movies?
And those movies.
Yeah.
I mean, these movies, it's too much work. You know what I mean? I only do it because, you know, like, I'm addicted to the business, you know what I mean?
But yeah.
And I like to constantly put stuff out. Ever since I did Pauly Shore is Dead, you know, I've been just, you know, every year or two I always put like these things out, you know.
Yeah, and I like that you are constantly still like trying to reinvent yourself, whether it's being, you know, because you had the days of the son-in-law and in the Army Now, and now like you do something like Politics that
totally different.
No one was expecting that.
Yeah,
from you.
Yeah.
What made you think like was, you know what, people want to know what Pauly Shore thinks about this election?
I wanted to take the political world, and I didn't want to be like a Democrat. I didn't want to be a Republican. I just wanted it to be like, you know, Bill Maher on Spring Break. You know what I mean? I kind of wanted to just have a really good time.
Yeah.
With, you know, like kind of have fun with the, because everything is so serious in politics. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a good time. And that was kind of my take on that, and that's what I wanted to do.
What was your preparation like for that special? I would know I would see you up a lot.
Yeah, it was hard. That. Yeah, it was. I worked with some writers that wrote for Bill Maher, some, you know, Danny Vermont and Lance,
nice,
who helped me kind of like craft some political material. Then, you know, I think I worked with them on some songs, some political songs. I did like Osama got Obama or Obama got Osama. Yeah. I did that. And then I did, and that was at the time when everyone was like pro Obama and he just got Osama and everyone's like all that. And then,
so the rhyme made sense.
Yeah. Obama got Osama. Yes, I did. You know what I mean? It was like, it's a cool video.
Yeah.
I think it came out really, really well. And then we did like a country song because I wanted to kind of appeal to like kind of the CMT audience. It was called Red, White, and Buddy. It was like based off of the Toby Keith song, Red, White, and Blue.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we did a political party rock, which was based off of LMFAO's party rock.
Of course.
And we did that. And it was just like I interviewed politicians. And I don't know. I just wanted to do something that was really fun, you know, for the election.
Yeah. So and the same way that when you came out with that, people were like, what, Pauly Shore and politics, is there...
Yeah, but that question is what makes them click on it or go watch it, because you're keeping it. And I think that's so important that you're... I mean, I feel like you're saying, like, you feel like you had your time or whatever, but you're still... The more you still put out, people are still going to keep coming for it if they've come for it for so long.
Yeah. It's not like I'm ever going to stop. It's just a lot more tiring now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. What are the main differences?
It's more of a grind.
Yeah.
Well, before, I used to get picked up in a fucking town car, and I used to get driven to a set, and I'd have a fucking, you know, breakfast burrito waiting for me.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Fresh orange juice.
I love fucking, that's like the what you're focusing on. It's like the main vast differences.
I had my sides. You know what I mean? You know? And then they had my wardrobe in there. And you know what I mean?
And people just at your disposal.
Dude, I had my wardrobe there. I'd fucking, you know... Fucking, they would say, they'd call me in for blocking. We'd block the scene and fucking do my thing.
I remember I saw an interview, I think it was with, I don't know if it was Downtown Julie Brown or Kennedy or something, but they said one of the strangest quotes I've ever heard, and that's when you were at MTV, you would come to them and say, you have to hide me because these girls are being insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was it Pauly Mania?
Absolutely.
How did you get the MTV
gig? A lot of vagina. A lot.
How did that? So you're at the store doing stand up, and then how does MTV? Right? Is it just stand up?
My manager at the time brought in the MTV head of talent. Mm-hmm. Her name was Drew Wilson, and they were casting for Spring Break. And my manager was like, you got to see this guy. And I'm like 19.
And what's 19-year-old Pauly Shore like at that point?
Pretty much the same as a 46-year-old guy. Just a lot quicker. You know what I mean? You know, and
doesn't have to stretch in the morning.
It was more important to get laid back then. Now I don't really care.
Sure.
You know,
God, that does change, huh?
Yeah.
Fuck.
It does.
and then they see you stand up in the store?
I auditioned for them right then. Oh, okay. And then, you know, and they were there and she says, we want to bring you to spring break. So I went down there and I fucking, you know, I was there with Christian Slater and Corey Feldman and
Dan Cortez, was he in the mix?
No,
yet?
He wasn't there yet. He came way later. And then, and it just went really bad, actually. It was just a bad experience because I was nervous and it was like, you know, thousands of kids and it was live MTV. And
this was your first,
I was doing.
And so they give you, and again, like no real coaching. They're just like, this guy's funny and charming, so he'll figure it out, right?
I guess. Yeah, that was it.
So you had to interview hot girls and you're just like.
Oh, it was like Downtown Julie Brown interviewed me and then, Buster Poindexter, and there was like fucking. I hosted some comedy show. And so, I don't know. It was a whole bunch of shit.
And it doesn't go well, and then you're like,
it wasn't
right.
good.
And then
they pretty much were like, go home, you know.
Here's a jello shot. Get the fuck out.
Did you think after that spring break, you're like, well, that was my shot. That was it? Or.
No, I just thought I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, I have to develop more.
And then did they come back to you for the next one? Or?
Well, what happened after that was. What happened after that was they were doing a, they used to do a show, a live show called Comic Strip Live at the Laugh Factory, and John Mulroney used to host it, and it was fucking amazing, and it was on Fox. It was awesome. It was like, you know, it was like live fucking stand up show.
It's the best. Yeah,
it was live, dude. It was
on
dope,
a,
dude.
On a damn
it was
network,
fucking
it was
dope,
great.
Dude. You remember it?
Yeah, I yeah. remember that. I remember Annie Evening at the Improv,
yeah.
and that's like. The whole the boom of the 80s and 90s, like you, every network had some sort of
stand-up show. Yeah. So that I did that, and that set I fucking just killed. Mm-hmm. I did really well. Nice. Dude. It was like my hair. I was like, I was out, yo, bro. You know, yeah. I did all that shit.
Full weasel.
Yeah, I was full tilt. And then we took that tape, and then we sent that to MTV, and they're like, oh shit, he's ready now. And then that's kind of like where I slowly kind of got back in.
Well, first of all, thank you for coming on our podcast, but you have your own podcast.
I do.
Great segue, Brad.
That's what I do.
What is it called?
It's called Interested, and it's a lot of work, man, these
it
fucking
is.
Things.
You're telling me.
I mean, Mark Maron was like, yo, this is like a full-time job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like just like, oh, let's just do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to have, you got to put them out every week and promote them and tweet them and connect your, you know, your fucking Uber shit to it. And
yeah.
Your fucking
look at all this fucking, look how many wires and
it's
cords and
up.
Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, it's the way it is. More eyeballs and earballs are leaving the TV and leaving the radio and going to online stuff. So.
Also, you're somebody, I think a lot of people that tune into podcasts want to. Hear the stories and experiences of people who have been very successful and are still doing it. And like when we had Whitney on, she was like, nobody wants to hear me on a podcast. And I was like, that is so bananas.
That's just her acting like no one wants to hear her. She knows that's just her little shtick.
For sure. There.
But I mean, banged her on my podcast.
Well done.
Like, yeah, because she keeps saying, no one wants to fuck me. I'm like, bitch,
what?
Let's do this. And I fucked her. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, so what is your podcast? What's the focus?
It's just, I don't know. What I'll do is I'll interview someone, then someone else will kind of comment on the interview. So this week is like I interview Carrot Top.
Amazing.
And then, yeah, wow. And then Larry the Cable Guy comments. Which is pretty cool.
Wow. Oh my God.
And a lot of, a lot of people don't know they started together in Florida.
That's insane.
Not as those people.
No.
Right?
Not as those people. Yeah, they started in.
As Dan Whitney, and I don't know what Carrot Top was called.
Scott.
Just Scott.
Yeah. And I'll see you upstairs. Okay, thanks.
Nice. Hey, it's nice to see you, Hannah.
Yeah, and you're someone who's seen how a podcast can change a career because you would see Maron go up in the OR after a second divorce when things were just at their bleakest, and now he's just doing whatever he wants to do in
the industry. I mean, the thing is about this business is like funny is funny, talent is talent. If you have those things going for you and you're persistent, you're going to make it.
Yeah.
You just are. It's just going to – you know what I mean? If you don't ever like say to yourself like – I don't know. No, I don't know. You know what I mean? If you don't get in that kind of place, like it's almost like, you know, getting Bin Laden. Like it was going to happen. You know what I mean? We were going to get
making it in show business is just like getting Bin Laden.
Yeah,
no, my it's favorite
true.
Quote from
yeah.
Pauly Shore.
But it's true. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, you know, like for
it's
me,
it's going to happen.
Like,
how are you
going to
get there?
Like I'm going to Denver, and it's like, you know, my focus is like sell tickets, make them laugh. Try to get some new material out, you know, get better, you get more intimate, try to just connect, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff, you know what I mean? And just get away from LA, kind of like regroup, you know?
Having those, you have to keep those things when you're still doing stand-up, like of challenging yourself, right? You have to still go out with a purpose.
Yeah.
How much new material do you try to create from a new weekend?
I don't know, man. You know, I was writing for a while. Then I brought in some other writers to help me write some tags. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that worked well. But I don't want to also, you know, have my stand-up feel like someone wrote it because my style is very particular.
Sure.
So I can't have someone feel like oh, that was like a joke that someone else wrote. Like, you know, even though like my movies and stuff, like, you know, you can write my voice, you know, even though I kind of rewrote and tweaked out all my films, but there was like a writer that was kind of helping me. So it's like, I want writers because at the end of the day, it's not about, oh, I don't need a writer. No, it's not about that. It's about what's best for the act.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What's best for the material? Because at the end of the day, or what's best for the special? It's like Ari Shaffir did his special the other night, which was great. And
awesome.
Like, I don't know if like other people helped him with this material. I don't know if he did it all himself. I don't know. But the point was is that, you know, you just want it to be good because you want people to see it and you want to be able to grow from it.
Yeah.
You want people to see it and be like, oh shit, like that's way better than I thought.
Yeah.
You know what I
when
mean?
Did you feel like you found your Pauly Shore voice? Like at what point?
I don't know if I still find it. I'm still trying to figure it out.
But like
it's
the persona,
hard,
the persona of like what you people saw in the movies.
I don't
you
know.
Never, that was never put on, right? Like you just, that was you.
Yeah.
And then,
it was pretty much me. You know what I mean? Like that's how I dressed. That's how I talked. That's how I acted.
So these catchphrases that people blew up, like that must have been crazy because you're like, that's just what I say. Right?
Yeah, you know, it started with the word major. You know, I say major, you know what I mean? That's the first word because I was doing a music video and I was like, major. And then it just kind of came, you know, developed from that.
That type of like cadence and like.
The cadence, yeah.
And so you're like, all right, people are responding to this. So maybe if.
Yeah, it was funny because I saw it back and I laughed.
The way you were dragging words out?
Yeah. Like when I saw it back, like when we watched the tape back, I was like, shit, that shit's funny. You know what I mean?
Because nobody talks like that.
Yeah.
So you were like, that's something. And I think that is something very smart. And that's the business side of you too, like honing in on like, oh shit.
Well, I didn't know it was a business or anything. I was just, you know.
That made me laugh.
Just made me laugh. Yeah. I wasn't thinking like that.
But then but then Hollywood's like, fucking please do that.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. I just, you know, I thought it was funny and then, you know, it was fun. And you know, we were even like, I have my YouTube channel, which I'm like connecting to my Twitter and all that crap. And
I love hearing Pauly say, like, I got my YouTube and my Vine and my podcast.
It's the worst. But anyways, I have, you know, we have, what is it, Throwback Thursdays?
Yeah.
Right
on Twitter, right? Yeah. Every Thursday, you know, and I have great stuff to throw back to.
Oh, you probably have the best.
So I got all the YouTube videos from my MTV. So I put those, or my Totally Pauly videos, and they're still funny, dude. They're still funny.
Up.
Like I was at Club Med, like I saw these videos and we're putting them up, and I'm like touching some Mexican dude's belly. I'm like, "Yo, bro, let me squeeze your belly and eat it. It's yummy." And I'm like doing that shit, and I'm like, "It's fucking funny, dude." You know what I mean?
It's good you can look back on those times. It's like it's still because and also what sucks about that is that MTV, like that's. You were part of the shit that helped build their brand, and now it's like not now that belly. Is famous because it's a 15-year-old girl on MTV.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What they want to see now. It used to be a fat Mexican guy and Pauly commenting on it.
Yeah.
Now it's a 15-year-old girl talking about if she should have it or not.
That's fucking weird. I know.
The last thing I want to say about the MTV thing, that whole just experience, because that helped like give that was the boost, right? Like to the next. I mean,
yeah, that was the one that I was. You know, it was really cool because like I was at a point in my career. I think it was like 92 or 93, where I was on MTV. I was starring in movies at the same time, and I was touring.
Shit.
So it was like, you know what I mean? And I was on tour buses, and I would perform, and I would never perform in theaters or comedy venues. I'd only perform in rock clubs.
Holy shit.
I would only perform for people that were standing.
How's that?
it was awesome because I'd have a band, and then the band would go on first, like the Spin Doctors or some shit.
Oh my God, that was the first concert I ever saw.
Really?
It was them, and it was unbelievable at the Bumper Shoot in Seattle.
They're awesome.
They were incredible.
Yeah, and they came on, and then I would come on, and then they would come on, and we'd do songs.
Oh my God, dude.
So yeah.
So all three of those at the same time. I mean, that's a lot, but you're, again, like, you can handle it all.
I don't know. It was just kind of the way it was.
You just kind of have to take it when it's coming.
Very fortunate. Yeah, fortunate that everything lined up.
Yeah, I don't think at that in that moment you have the sensibility of saying, "Oh, this is too much
what's
or too
crazy,
little." You
dude,
just keep doing
what's
it.
What's crazy is like if I would have Twitter back then.
Yeah.
Imagine if I had Twitter and social media back then.
While you're on the tour bus?
Just in general, if I had it, you know, how many followers I would have. You know, these guys, Justin Bieber's got like 30 million followers or 50 million followers. You know what I mean?
Obama doesn't have that many.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
Yeah, you would have had that in a second.
I would have had a lot of followers.
And you could, like, Adam Carolla tweets out every day just the words, "Get it on." That's all he, because that's his catchphrase, and it gets retweeted like 100 times.
Wow!
You could just go on Twitter at that point and tweet out, "Hey, buddy!"
Right?
And it would be like 1,000 retweets, whatever.
God damn it! Shit! 10 years too late.
How do we go back in time? The tour bus experience, awesome, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what it was.
Who would you bring with you?
Let's talk about my podcast.
Okay, all right, let's go.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, so podcast drops every what?
Yeah, it's
what day
every
of the
week. I really want people to hear it. It's you know, it's
get on iTunes
big,
or the...
A lot of big acts, a lot of big people I've interviewed.
It's such an original style, too, because we are saturated with podcasts, so it's a great idea that you have the episode and then having an even bigger name almost commenting on the
comment
episode.
On the other person.
Yeah, because if someone got Carrot Top or Larry the Cable Guy on their podcast... That'd be it. Like that would be the one pod. Like, okay, I got.
That would be enough. Yeah.
I got Larry the Cable Guy. I'm good. Yeah. You're like, I got Larry the Cable Guy, but let's add a little to it.
Yeah, I wanted to make it special.
Well, what's the website you can get it on?
It's just PaulieShore.com or iTunes or Stitcher.
So subscribe to it, comment on it.
Yeah, it's
download
cool.
it.
And there's a lot coming. When is this coming out?
Next week.
Okay, cool. So that'll be the Marc Maron podcast. That'll be the one where I interview Marc Maron.
Oh, my God.
So that one I interviewed. This was a really cool one. This one is the one with Marc Maron. I interview Kitty Bruce, who's the daughter of Lenny Bruce.
Yeah,
wow.
Holy shit.
Then Marc Maron comments on that.
Holy shit.
And that's a really cool one because it's not about Marc Maron. It's all about Lenny Bruce.
Right.
And it's all about Marc Maron kind of educating us on who the fuck Lenny Bruce was.
Yeah.
And that's cool because I like shut up a lot and I just listened to what Marc Maron had to say about Lenny Bruce, and a lot of people listening don't know who Lenny Bruce was.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you learn about who he is.
Do you like the interview dialogue exchange of the podcast?
Yes, except for the one we're doing right now. No, it's good. I'm just kidding.
What? All right. No. So now the special. We got to talk about this. When is it coming out? November.
It's not a special. It's a documentary.
Right.
Yeah, but what's a big difference?
It's a special documentary.
It's a special. It's a lot of handicapped people in it. Some special needs people.
Yeah. Perfect.
People can go online and Google Pauly Shore standalone trailer. There's a trailer out, and then the documentary comes out on Showtime in the beginning of December. I think it's December 4th at 8:00. And then we're also having a big premiere here
at
the store.
Yeah.
And we already have over 200 RSVPs.
Fuck
and
yeah, dude.
And it's going to be cool. I think Gary Shandling's coming. And
nice.
It'll be cool. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
And
so.
As soon as I saw the preview for it, in my head, I was just like, yes, this is something that people are going to be interested in because they know you from your movies and they know you from the hour that you go on stage, and then they don't know all the other shit.
Yeah. Also,
you're very funny off stage, so I love that there's a lot of like, because I think that's why people love podcasts and people love. You know, there's always a network trying to create a show where it's catching comics just, you know, being off stage, being their hilarious selves, which they always try to really, it's contrived because it's always so staged. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, you say at the beginning, it's you and a camera and a producer. Mm-hmm. So the shit's so raw and there's really funny moments with you. That one part in the trailer with you at the bar and you're like, I'm thinking about kids and a family. I don't know if I'm ready for that. And the guy goes, "No, you're definitely too old for that." And you go, "Jesus, man!" Right. It's such an honest moment, and it's hilarious. And then, like,
there was one part that where you're getting stretched out either by a trainer or something,
and
you're just like, "This fucking hurts!" Like you're screaming in pain, and but that's something that be like, oh, you just you stand on the stage for an hour a night and that's all you do. It's like, no, there's a lot that goes into that.
Well, it's just, you know, it's you know, it's when you get older, you know, like I said earlier, I'm 46, so I'm kind of decaying right now. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
That's the name of the next special, Pauly Shore Decays.
Yeah, but you got to stretch it out like typical Pauly when you say decay.
The thing is like, you know, your interests just slowly change, you know, when you get older. You know what I mean? Like, you just, you know, I want to go get fucked up. I want to go get pussy, but I know that the aftermath of that is going to last like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, all that stuff and like working out, like I got to be careful when I work out. I can't just go run 50,000 miles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I can't go do that shit. And I can't eat as much as, you know, because at the end of the day, like we're all going to last till we're 80. You know, do you want to live the last part of your life really fucked up? You know what I mean? Or do you want to be healthy? You know what I mean? And just be like a healthy old guy.
What's
that's the best. You want to be that guy. You want to be that guy you see at a bar, like a Holiday Inn. He's like 95. He's like still watches lesbian porn. Right. He looks like he's like 62. And he's just like, he's in better shape than you are, right?
Yeah,
and
he's like the guy that's on that commercial, the older dude, he's like, shows you like, I'm 80 something and I can lift this chair.
Yeah. Right? And
which is impressive at that age.
And he pulls up his shirt and he's got like a six pack. And you're like, I don't know why I'm staring at an 80-year-old dude with a boner. Maybe it's just me. Right. But, that's a solid 80.
Yeah. What, okay, so, so the documentary, when it comes out, what are you hoping that this is going to...
Anything that I do, and this is truthfully honest, I have no expectations. I really don't. I just want it to come out. I want people to see it and like it. If something cool happens and someone important sees it and they want to put me in something cool, if they don't, cool. You know what I mean? It's like I can't control. All I can control is the edit.
Were you very involved?
Of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's my whole thing. Yeah, I work with a group of people.
How meticulous were you about all the moments? I mean, like, because I'm sure there's even in the trailer, there's a good balance of funny and heart.
Mm.
And like towards the end of it, and I, you know, that's my favorite part about documentaries is getting, you know, really emotionally connected to somebody that you may or may not know. But at the end of it, you feel like you have a strong connection to them. And towards the end of it, you really are like, oh shit, like this is, you can tell how, you know, that this was a big deal for you to even like, have the cameras follow you and capture this much, because a lot of comics don't want people to know that much. They want to be like, I'm already bearing so much on stage with my words. I don't want them to see what it's like when I'm not on stage.
I wanted to pretty much show the whole 100% of someone's life, you know, because people listening to this all have lives. They all like go to work and then they go home, they go to work, and I wanted to show the whole thing. You know, right. I wanted to, my home was the road, and dealing with, you know, everyone has to deal with, you know, when they go home, they're, guess what? They're fighting with their loved one, or their kids are being fucked up, or their mom's sick, or their parents, or this, or all that just stuff that we deal with. I wanted that to be in the film.
Yeah.
What's, you
know, and maybe your kids will someday see this.
Maybe.
What's
Sandy Danto?
There you go.
Sandy Danto. He is. He's everybody's son.
Yeah.
What's, someone who watches this documentary, what's something that they'll be surprised to see?
Well, probably the same stuff that you guys, you know, that you guys saw in the trailer, you know, just that side of me. You know, it's the first time that I've done something where I'm not doing shtick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the first time that I'm not like putting on an act.
There you go. Know?
What if this documentary blows up and like, let's say fucking 7-Eleven wants you to be like their new spokesman, like the head... Would you do it like for
Hell
the new?
Yeah.
Like they were like, Paulie, we want you just to improvise all the spots and just for any new products or just like coming to 7-Eleven and it's you back in your Encino Man shit.
I don't know. Whatever.
the other thing I saw in the trailers, it shows you going around these cities and you're not like we said earlier, you're not just in your hotel room. When people recognize you on the road, is the average person cool, or do they just come up to you and say, let me hear you say Leaning Tower of Cheese?
No, they can't believe it, most people. They're always like, what the fuck are you doing here? And I say, karma. And on that note...
Yeah, that's a great way to close it. Paul, where's your Twitter?
My Twitter's just @PaulieShore.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, I can't stay up really late doing these
things. No, this is good. We're right an hour. This is perfect.
Okay.
That was a great way to end it.
Yeah.
Add on a laugh. You're a fucking true professional.
And
December 4th at 8 o'clock.
December 4th. It's on Showtime. Please listen to my podcast, which is just Pauly Shore. Pauly Shore is interested, and my website's Pauly Shore. And if you want to see me on tour, I'll be all over Ohio the whole month of November.
You love that place.
And then also I'll be in, I think, like Nashville in December and like Kentucky in December.
Awesome.
PaulyShore.com.
Sacramento. Sorry.
No, you to get them all out. Come on.
I'll be in Sacramento, I think, at Laughs Unlimited.
Nice.
I'm going to end the year strong.
Perfect.
What do you do in Seattle? That's where I'm from. What do you do when you go up there?
I play at the Parlor.
Yeah.
But he doesn't make a good deal for me. What's his name?
Ruben.
Spatch him. Right?
I hear you, man.
You know what I mean?
Pauly, you're someone who's definitely made his mark on the comedy world. When you look at the history of comedy, you can't pass over the name Pauly Shore. Your entire family has been a staple of comedy. So as a comedian, I want to thank you for that. Mm. And I also want to thank you for doing this podcast, man.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad we got to work out.
Fuck yeah.
And we got to do one more time, Leaning Tower of Jesus.
Oh, my God. Thanks, Pauly.
So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.